Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, good evening and welcome to San Clemente Punk for November 26, 2012. San Clemente Punk is proudly part of the Fighting Words Radio Network here on blogtalkradio.com. This is San Clemente Punk for the 26th of November 2012, like I said already. Tonight is in the second hour, we're going to have Andrew Klein from Strife as our guest. Tonight, though, in the first hour, we're going to have the usual mix of punk and hardcore. We're going to start off tonight with Salt Lake local band. I hadn't seen these guys at all. I'd heard about them and I'd seen some videos of them, but they played with Alpha and Omega about 2 weeks ago. The band's name is Prime Oppressor, and I was really impressed with these guys. Prime Oppressor started out with Brandon McDaniel, Ryan Riggs, both of Do Your Worst, the Straight Edge band Do Your Worst, Tyler Statler, and Jeremy Baker or Barker of Reach and Delegate. The songs had been written mostly by Jeremy and put the vocals, And after a few practices, Joe Jackson of Shutout, Delegate, the legendary Dog Welder, and actually founder of Skinned Elbow Records. You can check, you can check Skinned Elbow Records out at skinnedelbow.net. That's skinnedelbow.net. Took over for Tyler on bass. So Tyler Statler left, and so he could concentrate on his other musical endeavors. Each member of Prime Oppressor has years, if not, you know, of playing hardcore in the hardcore scene, as well as supporting hardcore in Salt Lake City and Ogden. The musical influences are definitely on the heavier side. You know, Joe Jackson himself, who I've had conversations with, great guy, by the way, and a great bass player. Cited Crowbar, Pulling Teeth, I Hate God, who's a personal favorite of mine as well, Martyr AD, Disembodied, and Ringworm. They have a very fast-paced, positive-style hardcore. And according to Prime Oppressor, they deliberately went against the current popular flow and knew what they wanted with their sound. They wanted heavy and pissed with aspects of anti-religion, death, and dying. They will be playing an upcoming show December 7th for the annual Suck for Santa show at Cafe Neo with Speak Out, Hitchhiker, Despite Despair, and Reflect. And December 18th, you can catch them with Starvest, Satan, Empty, and Twitching Tongues at Cafe Neo. And 21st of December, you can catch them at the End of the World show with Satan, Empty, Mouth Runner, Comprised, and Cherum. You can also download Prime Oppressor's album, Bring Me Home, for free off of Meteor Fire or at skinnedelbow.net. I suggest you guys get it. I downloaded it. Joe was nice enough to get it to me. I downloaded it. It's a fucking awesome fucking album. And I'm looking forward to seeing these guys again very soon. But we're going to start off tonight with Prime Oppressor. This is Prime Oppressor. Let me pull it up here. There it is. Prime Oppressor with Godless Fields. Okay, excuse me, that was Prime Oppressor with Godless Field, and you can find those guys on Facebook and SkinnedElbow.net. That's the music label, SkinnedElbow.net. We're going to move on now to the opposite spectrum. From Monterey County, California, come the Lonely Revolts. Very powerful riffs of they're a throwback band, punk rock glory type band, influenced by Crash Dog, Swinging Gutters, Minor Threat, Motorhead, The Clash. They really come with a message of faith and hope and love from down-to-earth guys. The Lonely Revolts are a very true-to-form punk rock band out of really working-class lines that seek a bailout of the everyday struggles of life with soul-surrendering hearts. Lonely Revolts you can find on their Facebook pages. Josh Galvin, who's become a very good friend of mine, actually sent me this. So this is the opposite end of the spectrum. This is the Lonely Revolts with Same Old, Same Old.
Thank you.
Okay, that was the Lonely Revolts with the Same Old, Same Old. Very good band. I like those guys a lot. They have a very throwback feel, very true to a punk form band. We're going to move on now to Supreme Commander. I played these guys before. Supreme Commander consists of Dan, Andrew, Ryan, and Boo. And I'm actually going to be interviewing these guys, I believe it's the 17th of December. I will have them on, or have one of them. I think I'm going to have them all on because they're actually practicing that day. So I think I'm going to have them all on. They're a DC hardcore band this song at least reminds me a lot of Government Issue, Kill Your Idols, very much Token Entry. And that's some of the bands they cite as their influence. You can check them out on their Facebook page, Supreme Commander DC. They're on the Basement Record label. They just released Paper Tigers, which is just a great album. You should check that out. You can find them at supremecommander.bandcamp.com. You can check those guys out. Very, very good band. Very talented band. And we're going to move on into Supreme Commander with, I played this song before, but I really like this song. This is The Message. DC Supreme Commander. You can check those guys out. That was The Message. That was off Paper Tigers. You can check those guys out on Basement Records. They also have a Facebook page, which is Supreme Commander DC. You can also check their Bandcamp page, which is supremecommander.bandcamp.com. Very good band, and like I said, I will be interviewing those guys on my show on the 17th of December. We're going to move on to a band that is a fusion of punk and really industrial. That was a side project of Jello Biafra, Al Jorgensen, Paul Baker, and Jeff Ward. of course, Biafra was frontman for the Dead Kennedys. Al Jorgensen is the founder and only continuous member of Ministry. So you'll listen to this song, and it's really, you know, you'll tell the influences right away. This song is Lard with Coming to Take Me Away. I really like this song, but it's really a fun song, and the way Jello sings this is just dead on. But this is Lard with Coming to Take Me Away. Okay, that was Lard with Coming to Take Me Away. And like I said, that was kind of a super band with, you could tell that was Della Biafra. And Al Jorgensen, of course, the founder and only continuous member of Ministry there. And you can both tell those influences, very, very heavy influences. We're going to move on now to another Salt Lake band. This is Hitchhikers with Echoes of a Dying World. I've seen these guys a bunch of times, and they've really become one of my favorite hardcore bands here in Salt Lake. And Salt Lake has a lot of great hardcore bands. But this is Hitchhiker with Echoes of a Dying World.
Yeah.
Okay, that was Salt Lake's Hitchhiker with Echoes of a Dying World. And they actually have, if you look up Hitchhiker SLC at Bandcamp, you can actually download their CD for free. We're going to move on now to Cause for Alarm. Cause for Alarm was one of the Victory Records bands. They started in 1982, and they're really one of the pioneers of the New York hardcore sound. And it's really unfortunate because I don't think they got their just dues. Keith Burkhart was the vocalist for the band. Stephen Fuller was bass. Eric Brito was guitar. And Carl Dynamo was the drums. Keith always included his liner notes and his perception of the punk scene and his thoughts on his relationship with Krishna and literature and everything in the albums, or you know, in his live record or in the albums and in his live shows. They were a very, very good band, and the fact they're still around really, you know, shows how great they really were. This is Cause for Alarm with United Races. Okay, that was Cause for Alarm with Poison in the Machine. We're about a half hour away from Andrew coming on as our guest. Looking forward to that. Andrew Klein, of course, from Strife will be our guest tonight. We'll have him for an hour. We'll play some songs, but we're going to do an interview. And I'm really looking forward to it, and I really look forward to talking to him for quite a while. We're going to move on now to a band that I posted on a Facebook page about punk rock and the underground scene and everything, and I posted that I have this show. Well, I got a response from a friend of mine. Well, now he's a friend of mine, Ian Tomel, who is in Voice of Addiction. Voice of Addiction is a Chicago-based punk rock band. You can find them at their Facebook page, or they also have voiceofaddiction.com. The Chicago band, they originated in 2004. The vocalist and bass guitar is Ian Tomel. I probably just slaughtered his name. I'm wrong. I'm sorry, Ian. Andy Bobby Petty is a drummer and backing vocalist, and Kyle Telev is a guitarist and backing vocals. They really had these are one of the bands that I really like, the throwback bands that are really, really true to the punk rock sound of the 80s and the classic, the classic sound. Some of their influences are Fugazi, American Steel, Blood for Blood, Born Against. So really, it's all over the spectrum. According to them, Voice of Addiction takes on the attitude that punk rock revolution instilled in us, but infused it with genre-mashing breakdowns. Personally, I love these guys. These guys are definitely one of my new favorite bands. This is Voice of Addiction with the first track off their album, Wrecking Ball.
man.
Okay, that was Voice of Addiction. Like I said, you can find those guys at voiceofaddiction.com or their Facebook page. And Ian is actually a great guy and a guy I really respect, that I've come to really respect. We're going to move on now to a band that it's Greg Bennett put together a side project. It's really, according to their Facebook page, they describe themselves as a collection of five individuals bound together by love for the writing of Ernest Becker and Samuel Beckett, and endless amounts of vegan food at Vancouver, Canada's Bo Kung Vegetarian Restaurant. This is 9 years in the making. Between Earth and Sky is fronted by Greg Bennett, of course, of Trial. He was also an original member of the Pist. The band consists of Sean Landy on guitar, Happy Creter on guitar, Alexei Rodriguez on drums, Greg Bennett on vocals, EJ Basin on bass, and sound guys were Blair Calbaba, Paul Forgues, and Theo Gatzunikis. I just slaughtered all three of those names. They're on the Hellfish label here in the United States, and you can find them at betweenearthandsky.com or their Facebook page. I love this fucking song, though. This is the first song off of their album, Between Earth and Sky. This is the self-titled Between Earth and Sky. I fucking love this song. Oh, by the way, just one thing. Greg Bennett, of course, has undertaken the monumental task of the 100 for Haiti. He started it. You can check those guys out. It's a Modal Logistics campaign of getting basically ambulances to a lot of the places in Haiti that were destroyed. And they kept it together. But right now they're trying to buy bicycles for 14 former child slaves who live in a safe house in western Haiti. They need $1,260 for it. I personally am going to help a lot to get this started. Greg Bennett is one of the best guys you'll ever meet. Down to earth, really cool guy. And I'm certainly going to help him. But check out 100 for Haiti. Get involved. It's a great cause, and honestly, I have reasons for saying this. I fucking hate Haiti. I've been down there. I've been shot at back in the 90s when I was doing in the military. I was down there when we were about to invade. Long story, but anyway, fucking hate Haiti because I hate going someplace where I've been shot at. But Greg has made me believe again. So this is Between Earth and Sky with Of Roots and Wings. Thank you. That was Between Earth and Sky with Roots and Wings. I fucking love that song. It's just such a just I love the breakdowns and everything. And of course, you can find Greg at, you know, he's the lead singer of Trial. But you know, that's Between Earth and Sky. That is a collaboration of several different bands. We're going to move on to a youth core band, Chain of Strength. They started out in Los Angeles. True Till Death was a 7-inch. It was released through Revelation Records. They were part of the Revelation Records bands back in the late 80s, early 90s. They were a straight-edge hardcore band, although they got a lot of crap because they supposedly broke edge because they... You know, they believed that straight edge was living a clean life, but not necessarily an alcohol-free life. Don't know, don't care. You know, different strokes, different folks, and people can live the way they want. Personally, I think these guys are fucking awesome. I have always thought they were awesome. Kirk Canales was vocalist. Ryan Hoffman was guitar. Chris Bratton was drums. Alex Barreto was bass. And Frosty Crunch, or Paul Hertz, was second guitar. Alex Barreto, actually, from 2006 to 2008, played bass for Alien Ant Farm. But this is Chain of Strength with Too Deep Until Now. Okay, that was youth crew band Chain of Strength. We're going to move on now to Union Jacks. Union Jacks are a Paris, France-based punk act, punk ska act. They just released on September 27th, Never Ending Struggle. I was lucky enough to get the copy from Beer Records. They're on Gorilla Asso, Carnage Punk Rock, Riot Ska Records, and Beer Records here in the United States. The album's available on iTunes already, and you can order you know, digital versions through Beer Records. They actually, this is their second release. They released Tales of Urban Freedom in 2009. You can actually stream that album if you go to unionjack.bandcamp.com. You can check those guys out. So they have a Bandcamp page. I suggest you guys check it out. I don't believe they have a Facebook page. If they do, I never found it. So they may, but I haven't found it. But this is, where is it? Union Jacks with Vaccines and Pills.
Pills are always don't mean much to me.
It's up to me for your great man.
No, I can't for your ability.
Don't bother with your problem.
We may help you if the cut might be.
And we cut you more than your end.
You should be reminded.
Formed in 2008, Longshot did. They're a Boston area hardcore band. They played, unfortunately, played their last show April 6th of this year with Lions, Auburn, and Aviator. These guys were so fucking good. I love these guys, and this fucking song just really, really hits me pretty hard. I love this song. Longshot was around from 2008 to 2011. The band consisted of Jeff DeBron, Mike Nierenberg, Ryan Kelly, Tyler Kershaw, and Ethan Harrison. They were unsigned, though they were really close. Warbird Entertainment was about to do a split with them, and it's really a shame that they went under. But you can find them at longshot.bandcamp.com. It is a free download. Go go to fucking Bandcamp, go to their fucking page, and download Realignment. This album just absolutely blows me away. This is my favorite song off it. Josh Herzer of Lion Lions is actually featured on this version. This is Long Shots with Word to the Wise.
I miss the day!
Okay, that was Long Shot with, what the hell was the name of that song? That was Words to the Wise. I really hate the fact that those guys broke up. They were a great band. So we're about 3 minutes away from having Andrew on with us. We're going to play one more song. This is Warzone. Warzone, of course, rabies, tragically died from complications of liver disease, which, by the way, will be the leading cause of death in liver-related deaths by the year 2020. I'm in the medical field. That's why I know that. But anyway, this is Warzone with one of the best songs I've ever heard from these guys. This is Warzone with As One.
Forgot to all my friends from Queens and Brooklyn. Goes out to my wife, Alexandra, who couldn't be here today. Song is called As One. My last song.
I've really been looking forward to this. Tonight, we have an interview with Andrew Klein of the legendary hardcore band Strife. Strife started out in 1991 in Thousand Oaks, California. They quickly gained fans and notoriety with their honest, straightforward lyrics and stage show and presence. One of the first Victory Records label bands, very big bands, Strife toured and played almost nonstop for several years, becoming one of the most influential hardcore bands of all time, with albums that are considered classics. After a long hiatus, Witness of Rebirth was released and is a piece of pure genius by the band. Tonight on San Clemente Punk, please join me in welcoming from the band the guitarist, Andrew Klein. Andrew, thanks for joining us tonight. How are you?
Thanks for having me, man. Good to be on the show. Good to be following up a song by some of my heroes, Warzone, one of my favorite hardcore bands and a band we tour with over the years, and then good friends of ours as well. So, I'm good, man. Good to be here.
Great. Now, Andrew, how did you come to gain a real love for music?
You know, it's weird. I kind of started playing music at a really young age. When I was a little kid, it's funny, I was telling somebody this story recently, but like as a kid, I would say I was a much more talented musician than I am now. Like I used to be able to, read music, and, I started off on the piano, and I took piano lessons and I could read music and doing piano. And then I switched to the trumpet. Actually, I was in the marching band. I was in the drum line, and that was all up until about seventh grade. And then I quit. I was into skating and punk rock. And I quit, and I decided I was going to play guitar in this imaginary band that me and my friends made up. We were all skater kids, and we're like, okay, we're all playing. I'm singing, and you're playing bass, and Andrew's playing guitar. So I bought a guitar and started playing in my room. I remember the first guitar I had was a really cheap, I don't even know the brand, but it was black, and it had green lightning bolts all over it and a whammy bar. And I broke it playing with a whammy bar one day in my room, broke the whole thing. And then I kind of stopped playing for a little while. I mean, I wasn't even really playing back then, but, just mess around. And kind of stopped playing, and I remember being a little kid sitting in my room, being into punk rock. Like, one day I would sit home and listen to the first Bad Religion record, and I'd have my guitar, and I learned every song off the Bad Religion, How Could Hell Be Any Worse. And I remember doing that to Instead and bands like that. And that's kind of how I learned to play guitar, was just sitting in my room, listening to these records over and over and, you know, figuring out songs. And, you know, at that time, I became, you know, friends with our drummer at the time, Sid, who's the drummer up through Anger Means even. And he had just moved to town from Riverside. He played in a few punk rock bands. He played in this band called FDI from Riverside. That was more of like a crossover thrash band. They actually played some really cool shows. They played shows with, you know, like DRI, and, you know, they played at this place called Spanky's with, you know, bunch of bands. So he had already had some experience, and he moved to town. We became friends. We were both into hardcore and punk rock. And that was basically it. Like, he was starting a band, and the guitar player at the time was kind of flaky. And I remember being in his room, just picking up a guitar, and we started jamming, and that's kind of how it all came into place.
So you picked up music by ear?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like I said, I did have formal training as a young kid, you know, and I'm sure that helped me understand, you know, things at the time I didn't even know were, you know, but the fundamentals of music. Like, I'm sure some of that formal training helped me understand chord progressions and simple stuff, you know.
Right.
Like I said, I was a little kid, yeah. And then once I started playing punk rock, like, everything was by ear. I know as a young kid, I remember taking a few guitar lessons. There was this place called Instrumental Music in Thousand Oaks, and that was kind of the place where every kid took lessons from. Like, we had this teacher, I think my teacher's name was Mike Davis, who was in this metal band called Theater, or everyone called them Theatra. And they were this, like, kind of glam metal band. But everyone took, if you took guitar lessons at Thousand Oaks, you took guitar from Mike Davis. And then if you took drums, you would take drum lessons from, you know, the other guy there. Or actually, my friend's brother also taught drums over there. So there was a few different people. And I remember taking a few guitar classes. I remember I learned how to play, like, Metallica's Fade to Black. And, I don't know, something else at the time. And I didn't last too long with the lessons over there.
Okay. Now, is there anybody in your family that you can really point to as your source of talent?
I wouldn't say talent. I'm not even that talented. So, no. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, I think it's more, I would say I'm more ambitious, and I like, once I set my mind that I'm going to do something, I do it. And I think it's more of that than talent. Am I a great guitar player or no? Am I a virtuoso? Hell no. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm good at what I do, and I would say I definitely have, like, some strengths in songwriting and arranging and stuff. But I always have this philosophy, like, you know where to find the best guitar players? They all work at Guitar Center. You're going there and those dudes will rip. They can't put a band together to save their life. They probably can't even write a song, but they'll outplay you. You know what I mean? Like, there's a different mindset between someone who can put a band together, put a song together, write a song, and then the person that can just rip. And usually those people that are super talented at guitar or drums, they're never in a band. You know, it's weird, but, you know, that's usually where you find the best musicians. They all work at Guitar Center.
Okay. How did your family feel about your choice in music?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, as a kid, like, that's the one thing I would say. Like, you asked where I got my talent from. I wouldn't say I got my talent from anyone, but, like, love of music definitely from my parents. Like my dad especially loved music, and he had a giant record collection. But it was everything from jazz, you know, Miles Davis, Charles Mingus, blues, to rock. You know, there was always the Beatles playing in my house, Janis Joplin. So, you know what I mean, Rolling Stones. There was always music. And my dad was one of those people, like, we would be sitting, you know, in the car driving somewhere, and he'd be listening to jazz on the radio, and he'd be like, oh, that's Max Roach on drums, and that's, you know, Miles Davis on the trumpet. You know, he'd be able to
right.
to recognize the players in the jazz music. And to me, that's insane. Like, I can't listen to a record and be like, oh, that's so-and-so on the bass. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, he had, like, a really different understanding of music. He couldn't play music, but he really loved, appreciated music. Like, you know, my parents were at Woodstock, and they saw the Beatles. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, wow.
So they were definitely, like, into music. And so I would say they were just having music around, I think, was enough. You know what I mean? Just being exposed to good music. And, like, I remember, like, being a little kid, probably, what grade? Sixth grade. And I bought my brother Eazy-E's first record when it came out. You know,
right.
And my parents didn't care. And I think at the time, like, most parents would think that was pretty questionable lyrical content or whatever. They didn't care, you know. They were pretty open to all types of music and different messages. And even politically, they were pretty open. So I think that's kind of helped me get to, I guess, a place where I am now.
Right. Now, when did you realize that you first wanted to start a band like Strife?
I mean, I guess probably when 1991 when we started. Like, yeah, like we started the band, like, the only one that could really play was our drummer. Like, he was the only one that had been in a band before. We got Rick. Rick actually was in a band before. He was in a band called Monster Club, which was more like a Misfits-style punk band with the members of this pretty well-known they became a well-known kind of early emo band called Still Life on Abolition Records. They were a really great band, Still Life. So Rick was
right.
in a band with them called Monster Club. I was just learning to play guitar. Chad was, like, again, somebody we picked, like, we need a bass player. You're playing bass. Like, he couldn't play bass, you know. I don't know how, can he still play bass? I don't know. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, I mean, it was kind of like we wanted to do a band, and we learned, you know what I mean? And so I remember, you know, going to shows, and I started going to shows in, like, 89, 90, and, you know, I'd lucky enough to see a lot of, you know, the last, you know, the youth crew, you know, before all the bands broke up,
right.
Judge, Gorilla Biscuits, Chain of Strength, and that was a big, Sick of It All, you know, although they didn't break up, like, those bands were the bands, like, that was our influence. Like, we loved going to the shows, we loved the energy. We were lucky enough, there was a venue in Southern California called the Country Club in Reseda, and they had all the best shows, from Bad Brains, Sick of It All, Instead, Bad Religion. Like, so we would go, and we would, you know, back then we weren't just into hardcore. Like, we loved punk, we loved hardcore, we listened to metal. We didn't, you know what I mean? Like, we listened to rap music, we listened to all types of music. And so, you know, I remember going to see, like, one of the first shows I went to was going to see Circle Jerks. And I think that's where we met Rick, was in line at going to Circle Jerks. We saw him again, Bad Religion Instead played. We saw him again, started talking to him. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
If you were into punk, you were into hardcore, you appreciated all of the heavier music, not just one genre. And you would go to all those shows, and there'd be 1,000 kids at those shows, you know? It's like, it was so different. But, you know, we started listening to music and noticing we were really into a lot of the heavier, more New York hardcore style bands.
Right.
And we loved the energy of these bands. But it was also like a band like Chain of Strength, like their live show, them jumping around. And then there was a band that was brand new at the time. Like, the first time we saw them was with Chain of Strength at the Country Club. And this was one of the shows, actually, there was about 50 people there. It was Chain of Strength, End to End, and a band called Outspoken. And this was the first time we heard of them. We got their demo, and they were a big influence on us as well. And a huge reason why we started Strife was just the energy of these bands. And we just wanted to do something. You know what I mean? Like, our whole goal, like, we started the band, like, man, we'd love to write some songs and play a show. And then we're like, man, it would be great. We never got to play the country club. That was always like, when we first started, like, that was our dream. Like, oh, if we could play the country club, we saw all our favorite bands there. That would be
right.
amazing. You know what I mean? But it was always
right.
just like, we started the band because we saw what these other bands were doing. We loved it. We were going to all these shows, and we wanted to just create something and you know, and just be a part of the scene, you know?
Right. Now, Andrew, what were the bands that influenced Strife when you guys were first starting out? And over the years, have those influences changed at all, either personally or as a band?
Like musical influences?
Yes.
I mean, definitely I would say they changed. Like early on, like I said, like Judge, Sick of It All was a huge influence on us, like one of our favorite bands and still is one of our favorite bands. Chain of Strength, Killing Time, you know, a lot, I would say almost everything on Revelation, even though you wouldn't hear it in our song.
Right.
We don't sound like Burn or Quit Band. We love those bands. You know what I mean? We don't sound like Inside
right.
Out, but you go see them and you feel that energy and that presence, and you couldn't not be inspired by that. You know what I mean? Like, whether or not you hear it in the music, like, you would definitely be inspired. I would say a big influence before One Truth came out was definitely Integrity. I remember I picked up Those Who Fear Tomorrow. I picked up the cassette. Actually, Ron Brotherhood was at a show at Spanky's. Undertow played, and I think it was Undertow, Force Down, and Statue, which Statue was a few members of Chain of Strength.
Right.
And Ron came down with Undertow guys. And this was Undertow was on touring on their demo. Pettibone wasn't even singing. I think they had a singer named Seth at the time. So it was like the early years of Undertow. And I remember picking up that cassette, Those Who Fear Tomorrow, from Ron, and listening to that every day. Man, I loved and still love that record to this day. It's one of the best hardcore records of all time. You know, definitely Judge, Cro-Mags. Like, all of these bands definitely shaped the sound of Strife. And I would say still, like, you know, like, for this new record, you could definitely hear a Little Judge. You could hear some Cro-Mags,
yeah.
I'm Sick of It All. Definitely.
Yeah.
But there's also some inspiration. You know, I think we got a lot of inspiration from a lot of the new bands. Just, you know, I think coming around and seeing that there's a whole new generation of bands, not only, like, doing their thing, but making great music, and I really got inspired by a lot of the newer bands. You know, even like a band like Terror, who are 10 years old, they're not new, but
right.
you know, when you've been a band for playing since 1991, they're newer. I love Terror, like one of my all time favorite hardcore bands, some of my best friends, and like they're definitely an inspiration. Like if there's one band that I would say is really carrying the torch of hardcore, Terror, 100%. Hardest working band there is, consistently putting out great records. You know, Keepers of the Faith was an amazing record. Their new
yeah.
record, Live by the Code, that's coming out next year, is an amazing record. So they're a big inspiration. I love seeing, like, newer bands, like, Rotting Out and just seeing the kids go crazy to them, you know, Take Offense. There's a bunch. There's so many good bands. So Baba, Alpha Omega, Down to Nothing. Like, there's so many good bands right now that, although you might not hear their influence in our songs, and maybe you would, but I definitely got inspired by listening to them and seeing them play, and I think that was a big inspiration and a lot of the reason behind us writing this record.
Yes. Andrew, I want to play a song off of the new Witness of Rebirth. The song's No Apologies. Could you tell us a bit about the song before I play it, please?
Yeah, definitely. No Apologies is basically a song about just living your life the way that you wanna live, and it's basically saying, like, everyone makes mistakes. and nobody is better than anybody else. And so basically, it's kind of a testament. It's just like, you only live once. Live your life the way you want to live, and that's it. And make no apologies for the person you are and the life that you live, and that's it. I mean, basically, you know, I think the strongest line is that is there's a line that says, when I'm alone with my thoughts, you can find me unashamed, and that's basically summing it up. It's just like, I know who I am. I know what kind of person I am, and you could judge me, you could talk shit, you could point your finger, but I know, you know, in my heart, I know what kind of person I am. And,
right.
Yeah, no apologies.
All right, just some strife with no apologies. Okay, welcome back to San Clemente Punk, proudly part of the Fighting Words Radio Network here on blogtalkradio.com. Tonight we're talking with Andrew Klein, founding member of the legendary hardcore band Strife. Andrew, again, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
No problem. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
It's a big honor. Andrew, how did you guys settle on the name Strife?
You know what? I don't even know, to be honest with you. Originally, we were called Stand as One in the very early years. We actually recorded a demo under the name Stand as One. And I want to say we were probably a band for about a year with that name, Stand as One. And we decided to change the name. And I remember coming up with Strife, and it stuck. I don't think there was a big meeting or anything. Maybe everyone liked it off the bat. But it was like, I don't even remember, you know, it was a long time ago. I don't even remember any other names that were kind of in contention. Like, it was just like, that was our name right off the bat. So, no big story on that one, I guess. but yeah.
Okay. Now, how was Strife formed in 91 in a, really in a melting pot of so many different musical tastes and genres in California? How was the band received in that scene?
It was weird. It was a much different time, I'd say, music-wise. I know, like, in our early years, like, we definitely it was weird. Like, for instance, where we grew up, there was, you know, five kids into hardcore, and they were all in my band. And that was it. There wasn't a hardcore scene where we grew up. Like, it was the five kids in my band and then some of our friends, and we kind of built the scene, and it was like we started our band. The only place at the time that was really doing hardcore shows was a place called Spanky's in Riverside, which is about a 2.5 hour drive, 3 hour drive by from where we were. I remember calling, this guy named Isaac booked it, and he later went on to book and own the Showcase Theater in Corona. And I remember calling him up all the time, like, "Well, hey, we're in a band called Stripe, we want to play." I remember trying to get on Instant's last show, and we got bumped off for an Orange County band, and we had a struggle because we, most of the hardcore scene was from Orange County, and we didn't know those guys, and they kind of had their clique and their bands and their friends, and that was kind of the scene. It was like, okay, 411 was going to play with Black Spot and Trigger Man every show, every show, because they were all friends, which is cool, but it made it really hard for us. And so we the first few shows we played, we booked ourselves. Like, our first real show, this was still as Stand as One, was we did it. It was a benefit show, and we did it at Rick's High School. And it was Stand as One, Downcast, and Outspoken with Still Life and a band I think called Disgorge. And then that was the first show we played. There were, it was a local show, which there weren't any, and it was a big place. And I remember there being a few hundred kids, which was pretty insane for that time. The second show we again booked ourselves, and it was Chain of Strength, Outspoken, Stand as One, Solitude, which became Drift Again, and Mean Season. Pre-Mean Season was a band called Have No Part.
Right.
They played, and this was so weird how we even did this, but in certain track homes, there'll be like a community pool, and we booked this at the clubhouse of the community pool. We booked a hardcore show. We got a stage and a PA, and, kids drove from all over town, and Chain of Strength drove from, Upland and Pomona, and it was crazy to think about. And then slowly just by going to shows, we made friends and started getting on shows. I know, at the time we were lucky enough, Mike Hartsfield from Outspoken and New Age Records, he liked our band. He was playing second guitar for us for a little while. So he was a big help. He was older and he knew some people. So he helped us out quite a bit. And our demo was in Zed Records, and there was a few kids that worked there. Idby, for one, was a big help, like booking us on shows. Caton, who is from a band called Hyrax, big metal band, and he later went on to sing in House of Suffering. He was a really big help, actually. Like, he would book us on shows all the time. We played a place in Long Beach called Toe Jams quite a few times, and those were all shows that that Caton did. So it was kind of just like meeting people and becoming friends with other bands and booking shows. And I think at the time, we had so many kids from our town that would come out when we would play, that it's like, oh, put Stripe on, they're at least going to bring 20, 30 kids, even if they're just from our town. But that's 20 or 30 kids that weren't going to go to the show if we didn't play. They got into hardcore because we were the only band in town, and they got into hardcore because of Stripe. So they've come out every time we played, and, gradually the scene in the town that I grew up in got bigger, and there's other bands, and, we became friends with more bands, and then it became a lot easier. But it was a different time, too. It's like, we played with bands like Sam I Am, which you wouldn't expect Strife to fit with Sam I Am, but at that time, like, you would mix all sorts of bands, like punk, hardcore, and it really worked. And you don't really see that so much anymore. But, it's like, if you listen to, like I said earlier, like, if you listen to punk, you listen to hardcore, you listen to metal, you listen to, some of the popular emo bands, or you liked all the DC stuff, like, you were into music, and it all just stood under one umbrella, like, you know what I mean? Like, so that you wouldn't like all the bands, but, you know, it's like, what hardcore kid doesn't like Dag Nasty or Embrace? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, I grew up listening to all that stuff. So, a band like Sam I Am wasn't too far off. You know, I love Sam I Am, Jawbreaker, Reason to Believe. Like, you know what I mean? I always liked melodic bands. One of my all-time favorite bands were The Descendants. So, you know what I mean? It's just like, I feel like it was a time where kids were a little more open to other styles, and, you know, and we would play with, you know, more of the PC bands like Struggle or Downcast, and then we would play like straight up hardcore, you know, with Mouthpiece and Resurrection or whatever, you know what I mean? So I think it was a different time, and it was definitely cool. You know, there was a, you know, later on in the 90s, there was a great place in L.A. It was basically the only place in Los Angeles booking shows, and it was called the Macondo. It was a cultural center on Melrose and almost to Vermont. And they would book all types of bands from Born Against to Spitboy, Los Crudos, Strife. Strife played the first show there with Social Justice, who became Downset. You know, Downset would play the Wolves Collide. Every band, if you have the only place in L.A. And I feel like that was such a big part of the Southern California hardcore scene at the time. Like that little club, like, is what kept so much going, because every band came through there. Like, you look at flyers now, and you can't imagine that these would be in a place that held like 75 to 100 people. Like, it'd be Strife, Unbroken, Undertow, Outspoken, and Mean Season, all on one show. And you're like, yeah, that, you know, that holds 100 people. Or, you know what I mean, Chorus, and Chorus of Disapproval, and Outspoken, and 1134, and whoever, you know what I mean? It's just like crazy to look back at all these flyers, and you're like, wow, and that was all in a place that held 100 people. Like, you know, that was a great place for the hardcore scene in the 90s, for sure.
Now, when Strife very quickly gained a lot of fans and notice, and you were picked up by Victory. How did that come about, and how did the band react to that?
I remember – this is another point. I remember getting a phone call on my home phone. I live with my mom. When the Only the Strong came out was 93. So I probably got a phone call in 1992 from Tony Victory, and he was calling us to be on the Only the Strong compilation. That was the first time he reached out to us. 92 puts me at probably 11th grade. You know, at the time, Victory wasn't a big label. You know, they released an Integrity 7-inch, a Billingsgate record, I think an Iceburn record, and not much else. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, wow, the biggest label in the world is calling us. It was like, oh, this is a cool label. I have their records. And Tony was calling us. He was asking about this comp, and of course, we said we'd do it. We recorded What Will Remain for that comp. It came out in 1993. I think once we recorded, I mean, definitely, like, we were working hard in the early years. You know, we put out a 7-inch on New Age. We put out a 7-inch on Indecision. Both of those were okay, and I think we kind of found our place and kind of got to a new level of popularity with the two compilations we did at the time, which was Only the Strong. We did What Will Remain, and then we did a compilation called It's for Life right around the same time when we did Am I the Only One. That comp had Mouthpiece, Lifetime, Flagman, Resurrection, had a ton of bands also. And I think that was really the first time we got not only had like a good recording, but we kind of found our sound and really knew what we wanted to do as a band. So both those songs came out at around the same time, and right then it was like, okay, we kind of got pushed to a new level of popularity. Right following that, we did our first East Coast tour, you know, a show that sticks out in my mind is one of the, you know, best shows we ever played, kind of legendary to the 90s hardcore kids was this Middlesex hardcore show in New Jersey. And it was like, basically, you look at the flyer and it's every band from the 90s on one bill. It was like Strike, Outspoken, Mouthpiece, Resurrection, Lifetime, Flagman, Ashes, Grip, Endpoint, Four Walls Falling. Like, I'm missing a few bands even. Like, it's insane. It wasn't a fest. It was a hardcore show. It was probably $10, probably $8. You know what I mean? It was a fest before kids were doing hardcore fest. And it was insane. There was, I don't know, 500, 700 kids. It was, you know, it was a big place, a crazy show. And that show happened right after those two comps came out. So we definitely got a great response, especially for those two songs. And we did a little tour around that. We did a show out in Boston at, I think at Harvard Square. There was a church up there. I forget the name right now. We played there, and we did a show at the Lost Horizon in Syracuse. And so, that was kind of right when I felt the band was getting popular, and that was largely due to both of those comps. And then after that comp came out, Tony asked us to be on Victory, and, you know, we were really happy with the comp, so we signed a deal with the devil and recorded One Truth.
Okay. Now, One Truth, and the reviews for One Truth were, you know, things like Pure Gold, Classic. How do you feel about that now that you're older and really have a chance to look back? And how did you feel about it then?
How did I feel about the record?
Well, no, about the reviews. You know, the real, you know, where it was a reaffirmation.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, at the time we recorded a record, we spent a long time writing it. We spent a long time recording it. We're super happy with it, with everything from the recording to the layout. To, you know, it's like we didn't think, you know, at the time, it's like most hardcore bands had one 7-inch, maybe two 7-inches. If they did record a record, they recorded one. You know what I mean? It's like you didn't really see too many bands recording four LPs. Or, you know what I mean? It just wasn't that common for hardcore. And, you know, most of my favorite bands at the time had one or two 7-inches, and then they broke up. So, you know, I think we went into it like, oh, this could be our only record. Let's make it as cool as possible. Let's do a gatefold. Like, nobody does a gatefold. You know what I mean? Obviously, a few bands have done gatefolds, but it's like, at the time, no other band was doing gatefolds. Like, let's do a gatefold and make it something super cool. Like, so we can always look at it. When we're old, we can pull this record out and be like, wow, this is a really cool part of my life. You know what I mean? So it's like, we went over every detail to make it just right. And I definitely think at the time, One Truth came out, I feel like it was kind of what the scene was missing. It's like, you know, a lot of bands were going like the PC route or the noisy route or emo, and I think there was a real void for kind of that straight up late 80s youth crew inspired sound. That was missing, and I think we came out and it was a good sounding recording, and I think, you know, people kind of got energized, and that was great. I mean, I don't think it's the best record in the world, but I could listen back to it, and there's definitely some good songs, you know. There's some good songs on it for sure.
Right. Now, between One Truth and In This Defiance, you released a, well, now somewhat rare 7-inch, Gray, as well as you taped the legendary video One Truth, which, what prompted both of these?
Well, the Gray 7-inch kind of came, like, we were working on a record for In This Defiance, and it seemed like there was a big gap between One Truth and any recorded material, really. So we put out Gray just to release new songs, you know, just so it's like, you know, our record was taking a while. We just wanted to get in the studio and record a few songs. So, you know, we wanted to play new songs in our set and have kids know them. And, you know, that's why we recorded the 7-inch, and actually, you know, both of the songs are on In This Defiance. It's Gray and To an End, and I, you know, and I think it says that, you know, both those songs are off our upcoming LP, and it was kind of just to kind of build hype for the new record and give the kids something to listen to and give us something to be excited about and you know, be able to add songs in our set. And so that was the reason behind that 7-inch. I mean, looking back, I probably would have added an extra song that wasn't going to be on our record to make it a little, you know, a little more special, as opposed to just, oh, there's two different recordings of songs from our upcoming record. But I think it served its purpose. And then the One Truth Live documentary kind of came about. We had a friend that started going to shows that was a video director, and he came. It was funny because he was really into bands like Korn and Deftones had just started. He was into the Deftones and more like more just, you know, newer rock style bands. And he came out to a Stripe show, and he was blown away just by the audience participation and the energy. And actually, the first show that he ever came out to was it was at the Ice House in Fullerton. I forget who he played with, but it actually became there's a video for Through and Through, which we cut from the footage he filmed the first show he ever saw us at. And then he was interested on just coming on tour with us and filming it. So we worked it out with Victory, and we figured out a way. We had him and two other guys came out. They filmed every show and, you know, came home and edited it all together and put together a cool little documentary, you know, live thing that not too many hardcore bands at the time did, you know. It was kind of, in the hardcore scene, there's all, I wouldn't say it was the first, but it was one of the first, you know, kind of documentaries and live, you know, it wasn't even a DVD, it was a VHS at the time. And I think that was a big thing for the band as well, just because it was one of those things that kids all over the world, because before YouTube and before the internet, and it just gave kids all over the world something to pop in their VCR at home and watch and see the live show. And I think it was just a different experience than just listening to the record at home, you know, seeing the visual and seeing the live shows. And those live shows were insane, like some of the craziest shows we ever played. So I really thought that was a good thing for us at the time. And it's interesting to see, you know, to meet kids now that like, oh, I'm actually in the video, you know, you guys interviewed me outside or whatever. Like, you know, I remember actually we played with American Nightmare the first time in, when was this? Probably like 2002. We played with American Nightmare. I remember I met the bass player and he was telling me, he's like, oh, I'm actually in that video. He's like, I'm not going to tell you who I am though, cause it's too embarrassing. So somebody could probably figure it out. I never went back and watched it to find him, but he was, you know, it was interesting to see, like, you know, kids and meet kids that, you know, grew up, you know, going to our shows or, you know, got influence from our records or from watching that video and, you know, later went on to start their own band and were, you know, were successful. I mean, that's awesome. That's why we do it.
Now, Andrew, I want to play another song off the newest Strife album, Witness of Rebirth. The song is Face Your Failures. Could you tell us a bit about the song before I play it, please?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would say the title kind of says it all. I'd say it's one of the more inspirational songs, lyric-wise, and it's basically just, you know, just when you get knocked down, just refusing to be defeated and just kind of learning from your mistakes in life and not losing hope.
Okay. All right. This is Strife with Face Your Failures.
Look back, what was lost and learned.
Okay, welcome back to San Clemente Punk, proudly part of the Fighting Words Radio Network here on blogtalkradio.com. Tonight our guest is the legendary hardcore guitarist Andrew Klein of Strife. If you have any questions for Andrew, you can call in at 347-202-0832 or click on the free Skype link on the show's page. Andrew, again, it's been a real pleasure to having you on tonight.
Cool, man. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. Now, Andrew, in this Defiance came out, and you had several guests that were involved. Chino from the Deftones, Dino from Fear Factory, and Igor from Sepultura. How did you get these guys to collaborate?
It was weird. When we were writing that record, you know, we kind of had an idea. I think at the time for a hardcore record, you didn't really have too many bands having, you know, people do guest spots on their record. Like, it's kind of the norm now in a way. And at the time, I would say it was a little more, maybe a little more cutting edge or just a little different. Like, I always liked, like, you know, on a rap record, like, you know, you listen to somebody's record and there's, you know, whether it's Dr. Dre and, you know, there's a Snoop Dogg
right.
feature or a Corrupt feature or a Nate Dogg. And I kind of went to the record looking at it that way. We're like, you know, who can we have on this record that not only would be cool, but it's going to make it sound different. And we also wanted to kind of bridge the gap between hardcore and metal. Like we were all hardcore kids, but we loved the Deftones. We loved Sepultura. We loved Fear Factory. We loved Slayer. We loved, you know what I mean? We were all into metal, and we wanted something that would, you know, on one hand, it would expose us to their audience, but at the same
right.
time, it would hopefully open up our kids' minds to their music. You know what I mean? Like, and that's kind of the goal. You know, we had just got off tour. We toured with Sepultura in '96 on the Roots tour in Europe, and we actually played the last. That was the last tour, and we played the actual last show that Sepultura played with Max and the band. And that was a show at the Brixton Academy. So we had just got off tour with Sepultura, then we went to the studio to write the record. So having Igor on the record was a no-brainer. Like, he was a, you know, he was a fan of the band, a good friend of the band.
Right.
And, you know, he was the reason we got on that tour. You know, he came, I remember we met him, we played a show in Arizona, and he came out to, Sepultura was living in Arizona at the time, and Igor's drum tech was this guy named Kishi, and he was this Japanese-Brazilian kid, and he was really into hardcore bands. I remember Igor was telling that Kishi told him, like, oh, Strife is playing, you have to go see them, like, that's one of my favorite hardcore bands. So Igor came out to our show in Arizona, we met him there, we became friends, and then, like, 2 months later, they asked us to go on tour. And so we were really close with Igor, and so asking him to play on a record was no big deal. I think he was living in San Diego at the time, and he came up, and we wrote and recorded the song Overthrow with him in the studio. So that was a song that we wrote with him, which was really
right.
cool. And then Chino at the time, like, you know, Deftones obviously now are huge, you know, a huge band. And at the time, they were definitely big, but, it, you know, this was right around the time of their first record. And we all were fans of the Deftones from their demo. We had the demo early on, and then the first record when it came out. And they were friends, you know, our friends from far were friends with them. We had a manager at the time that was from Sacramento. So basically it was making a phone call, like, yo, Chino, Strife wants you to come down and sing on the record. Do you want to do it? And he knew our band, and he came out and sang Will to Die with us. And that was crazy. I remember we kind of gave him loose direction and a kind of idea what we wanted to do, and he just came in the studio and just right off the bat just started singing, and we were all freaking out because we loved his voice, and we were big fans of the band, and just hearing him sing on our song, to us at the time, it was such a really cool experience. And it was funny because I recently went and saw Deftones at the Troubadour, and I saw Chino, and I hadn't seen him in years. And, you know, my friend Dom was like, oh, yeah, this is Andrew from Stripe. And I was like, yeah, you know, you sang on a record way back, you know, 96. He's like, oh, man, Stripe. He's like, I remember. He's like, it's so crazy because everywhere I go all over the world, people always give me props for, you know, for working with you guys. He's like, I always think it's so cool. And then it was funny because he told me, he's like, man, I always, even to this day, I always wish I could re-sing it because I know I could do it better. And I was like, I thought that was funny, you know. To me, he did a great job, but I think it's funny, you know, obviously every musician is the worst critic. And, you know, he came in, did another song, just came in and sang it. We thought it was great. We still think it's great, but it was funny to hear him say that. And it was great to hear that, you know, it's like that was the reason we wanted him on the record. Like, not only would their fans know us, but I wanted our fans to listen to them and respect them as a band and open their mind to what they were doing because, you know, it's still heavy. There's music with a cool message, and it, you know, it's a different vibe, but you know, it's not too far off. Then, you know, the spirit is there. And then Dino was another one of those guys. Like, you know, we'd see him at shows. I remember the first time I met the Fear Factory guys, we played with Sick of It All at a place called the Alligator Lounge in West LA, and the Fear Factory guys came out to the show, and we had met them and kind of just became friends. And at the time, Dino was everywhere in L.A. You couldn't go to a show without seeing him, or, you know, it was always the Rainbow. But he was always watching bands. And he's a great dude, really, really funny and fun guy to hang out with. And so we hit it off, and I would always hang out with him when I got a chance. I think my friend Dom was living with him at the time. Dom owns a store called Brooklyn Projects in L.A., and I think he was living with him at the time, and we just became friends. So, again, it was one of those things. We were recording the record, and we're like, Dino, you want to play on the record? And, you know, picked him up. We recorded way out in past Canyon Country. It's some weird, you know, our producer at the time had his home studio kind of in the desert, and, you know, we drove him out there. He came in, played a song real quick, and that was it. And he actually came out. We did the record release show for Miss Defiance. We played at the barn in Riverside. We did a show. It was Hatebreed, and Despair. And Dino actually, that was the one time he came out and played the song live with us. So that was kind of cool.
Okay. Now, with the new album, Witness of a Rebirth, you joined 6131 Records. How did that relationship form, and how was it to be on a label that has bands like Rotting Out, Focus Minds, and Alpha and Omega, and Hardside? You know, clearly a label that was dedicated to the hardcore community. And did that help you with your decision to join the label?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Like, that's why we did. Like 6131 Records, it's a newer label, it's a smaller label, but they put out some really cool records, and I'm really good friends with the guys in Alpha Omega.
Right.
And actually, like, I helped do some pre-production for their record, and then Aaron, the guitar player, he actually recorded all the demos for our record. I did them at his house. So it's like we've been friends with those bands and fans of those bands, like Alpha Omega and Rotting Out, you know, specifically are some of my favorite newer hardcore bands right now. So
right.
I wanted to be on a label with not only bands I like, but I wanted to be on a label that was just excited about working with us, excited about our new record. And you know, and I told Joey for the first time I met him, like, I'm looking for a label that can push us like we're a brand new band. Forget about everything we've done in the past. And
right.
What would you do if we were a brand new band, and how can we make this even bigger? And at the same time, it's like, cause I feel like a lot of labels, you know, think of Stripe and they're like, okay, well, Stripe has their built-in fan base. They're going to sell X amount of records. So we don't really need to do too much work. That's kind of how I felt like Victory did with our last record, Anger Means, on there. They just kind of threw it out there and was like, Stripe has, you know, X amount of fans. We don't need to market it. We don't need it. And it's like, we really wanted to reach the new kids and new fans and kids that maybe heard our name but never heard our music. And I really felt like the way to do that was to team up with a younger label that was just more in tune with the scene and the kids today. You know, Joey works really hard, and he knows good bands. He puts out good bands. He does a really cool festival called Sound and Fury every year. And he was just excited to put out our record, and I like that, and that, you know, and that's why we decided to work with him. And at the same time, it's like, I think it's cool. It's like, you know, there's, I feel like the whole theme of the record is about carrying on the traditions that we learned from the past, from hardcore, and passing that down to the new generation. And it's like the new bands, the new kids, but the new labels. And if we could do something to help a new label like 6131, a younger label, and help them grow and help them, you know, help, you know, spread awareness of them. And I thought that was cool than going with a more established label as well. You know what I mean? Like, so there was a few reasons.
Okay. Now, Andrew, there's been short tours and shows with Strife to build the excitement, but when can we see a full U.S. tour?
Full U.S. tour? I don't know. It's like, we definitely, I mean, here's the thing, like, we're back, we recorded our record, and we're doing as much as we can. I mean, you know, the reality is we all have jobs, we all work, we all have bills, we have apartments, you know what I mean? Like, we have a bunch of other things that we have to do, and so we're fitting in as much touring as we can without disrupting our entire lives. So a full U.S. tour might not be a reality. I know we're definitely talking about doing, you know, week and a half long stretches here and there, and we're definitely trying to cover as much ground as we can, whether it's, you know, a week long West Coast tour, a week long East Coast tour, and then, you know, trying to cover through Texas or Florida. But I don't think we're going to be touring more than, you know, a few weeks at a time. And that's for anywhere we go.
Okay. Now, Andrew, I do have one question that was that was sent in an email question. You don't have to answer this, but it was asked by someone. They were curious. They said the new record has, in their opinion, strong straight-edge overtones, yet the band still has members that are not straight-edge. And how do they feel about perceiving that, you know, from the new record?
I mean, I wish it wasn't by email, because I'd like to know what song they're thinking of so I could clarify it. I mean, there's definitely not one straight-edge song on the record. You know, and that was obviously intentional. Strife was a straight-edge band in the 90s, and we are no longer a straight-edge band. I'm straight-edge, and everyone in the band supports the straight-edge scene, the movement, and thinks it's a great, positive thing. But no, we are not a straight-edge band. There's not one song on this record that has anything to do with being straight-edge. So I would say maybe dig a little deeper into the lyrics, and, you know, or maybe they just interpreted that because that's how they feel. You know what I mean? It's like, but there's definitely not anything close to a straight edge song on there. I mean, and if you could say there, if there's anything that's not, I would say, if there's anything that tells you that it's not, is a song like you asked about, No Apologies. You know what I mean? And that's basically saying that we're going to live our lives how we want to live and make no apologies for who we are and what we do.
Okay. All right. Well, Andrew, we are up against the clock, and it's been a real pleasure getting to know you over this hour. I'd like to give you the last few minutes to tell us where we can find Strife online and give you a chance to thank anyone or give any shout outs that you'd like. The floor is yours.
Cool. I would say definitely, follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/StrifeLosAngeles. Stay up to date to everything that we're doing as a band and future shows and whatnot. Southern California, we have some upcoming shows. We have a show in February with the Cro-Mags at the Key Club. That's definitely
nice.
Going to be a great show. And this weekend we're headed out to the East Coast to do a few shows. November 30th, we play LNG in Connecticut with Super Touch and Death Before Dishonor. And December 1st, we're playing a show at the Barbary in Philadelphia that Joe Hardcore put together. That's an amazing lineup. Strife, Down to Nothing, Soul Search, Suburban Scum, Mother of Mercy, and a few others. It's, you know, an amazing lineup, so we're definitely looking forward to play that. And right now we're currently booking some dates for Europe in April. So, yeah, stay tuned. And we got a lot of stuff in the works, and we're just happy to be back and be playing. And definitely check out our new record, Witness a Rebirth. It's out now on 6131 Records, and it's available on iTunes and your local record store, and give it a chance. And if you're a fan of hardcore, I definitely don't think you will be disappointed.
Okay. Now, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. I want to close out the show with my favorite song off of Witness a Rebirth, and I think fitting one to end with, Carry the Torch. Could you tell us a bit about it before I play it?
Definitely, yeah. Carry the Torch, I would say I say this all the time. It's kind of the title track of the record. The title, Witness a Rebirth, is the first line in the song. And it's the whole theme of the album, I would say, could be summed up with this song. And it's basically about taking everything that we learned and loved about hardcore from all of our favorite bands and passing it down to the new generation of kids. You know, there's a new generation of kids, of bands, of record labels, and it's basically passing that down to them and saying, do the right thing. Like, this world is yours, and you could make hardcore something great, or you could destroy it, you know? And that's kind of what, you know, the theme of the record. It's like, do everything you can to make this a great place, because, you know, I would say hardcore definitely shaped who I am and who we are as people. I would say that everybody in the band could probably say that. It shaped who we are, and it could be a very beautiful thing, and it could be a very ugly thing, you know, and it's just like, do the right thing. Make this a cool place. Make it a place where kids want to come and make this, you know, make it do everything that can make it as big as it can be.
Okay. Andrew, again, thanks so much for coming on. We're going to close out tonight with Carry the Torch. This is Strife with Carry the Torch. See you guys next Monday.
Thank you.